everybody. This is Sarah Obritis on Eat to the Beat, a program about food and farming and eating and where it all meets music, art, filmmaking, and other cultural endeavors. We're here on Heritage Radio Network, and we are sponsored by Hearst Ranch, guys who make really good beef. Thank you. And well, today we have a very special guest and someone who's become a fast friend of mine. His name is Robert Drake. And well, anyway, if there's any, if there's the best example of eating to the beat is literally getting out there in the public, eating and drinking to the sounds of your surroundings. And well, Robert's an expert at how to make that work properly, to have a great time while you're out there. But he has a whole lot of technical technical background and a lot to tell us. So I will stop there and say hello. Welcome, Robert Drake, to the show Eat to the Beat here on Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, ho. So Robert, in a nutshell, has been in the business of sound and music since he was a kid. And today he is building song lists, and this really is a nutshell. He's building song lists for many bars and restaurants, not only in New York City, but all over the country and really all over the world. But that didn't come fast and easy. So I wondered if we could start with the that your childhood. You've been in the business since you were a kid. What were the early years like, and how did you get so involved with making music, playing music, setting up sound systems, and working ultimately with bars and chefs, restaurateurs, owners, and the food and beverage business?
Well, as a kid, I used to hang out in my dad's store. My dad was in electronics, and he basically sold a lot of, at that time, high-end stereos, TVs, radios, that sort of stuff. And I got familiar with that, enjoyed tinkering, and one thing led to another. I used to wire up my house in Queens so that anyone walking by, I actually would have a microphone in the house. I could talk to them through a speaker hidden in the trees. So, and I used to have switches to turn speakers on and off all over the place.
Well, specifically, you told me your dad worked for Fisher, which was an old...
worked for Fisher Radio.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I basically, after school, after my high school, which was kind of an art school where I studied theater arts, I got into the sound part of the theater, making all of the show tapes. And as I made the show tapes, the instructor that I had was probably, the department was very small. There were only three of us. There was an instructor, and there were two of us who would, one would make the tapes, the other would do repairs on microphones and things.
And this is in high school?
In high school, all the theater performances.
You were blessed with such a...
Well, the instructor was the stage manager of the Billy Rose Theater on Broadway. So we had everything that the Billy Rose had. And basically, after I finished school, the instructor said, "You have no business in high school whatsoever." So he talked to my parents, and they got me into an electronics school, and I went from there. And I was working all through school.
And in the meantime, you were building playlists for friends' parties
and underground scenes. I was always building playlists, and then as things progressed, I worked for Atlantic Records for a while. I was a maintenance engineer for Atlantic Records. This was after I worked for Fisher Radio Corporation as a technician. I was a maintenance engineer for Atlantic Records during the time that Bette Midler did her first album, Aretha Franklin, Roberta Flack, all those albums, Foreigner, Led Zeppelin, even the Stones had done some stuff there.
So you were working at, let's clarify for the lay people, kind of like myself, that meant that these were facilities where they were mastering their records, they were recording there.
They were recording.
And so you saw it from the beginning to the end, and you were around.
Which what was really good about Atlantic is Atlantic was one of the few studios where everything was in-house, meaning that Ahmet Erdogan Nessie Ertegun, Jerry Wexler, they were all on the top floor. And I got into Atlantic Records by repairing their stereos, because somebody needed to repair their stereos, and I convinced them that I'm the one to do it. And I got in there repairing stereos for all the executive offices. And then when they figured they couldn't fire me after I fixed them all, they put me in the maintenance department. So I was actually working in the studios, in the recording studios, as a maintenance engineer. So I got to see all of those amazing records being cut.
And then, so you built your library. Well, first off, it seems like you were part of a dying breed to begin with, because you were so young. You were brought in to accomplish such technological feats, and maybe there weren't a whole lot of kids or adults or anyone out there repairing electronics, even decades ago.
No, it wasn't that there weren't a lot of people doing it. It was that nobody got into the business that way. The way everybody got into the recording business is by sweeping floors. And I managed to get in through background, my technical background. And the music kind of helped a great deal, because I had the musical background. And as a kid, I was making these tapes constantly for friends and whatever. After I finished my tenure with Atlantic, I started. I opened my own studio, which was a small studio on 52nd Street, where I still live. Mm-hmm. I still live above where the studio was. I recorded an album there, which went on to become the first Chic album with Nile Rodgers, and so I co-produced it and recorded it there. And during that time, I met some people who saw that I had two turntables and assumed I was a disc jockey, so said, "Oh, come to our club and play." And I, before I could say anything, I wasn't a disc jockey at the time. They hired me to be a disc jockey in their club, and I was playing at a black club. I was a white disc jockey in an all black club.
This was when and where?
I'm going to date myself right now.
You already have.
All right. This was. This was a club called the Night Owl on 9th Avenue, across from Cooper Union.
Yeah.
It was on the in the penthouse of this club that was, during the day, a martial arts studio, at night an after hours disco. This was 1973, 4, and 5. And they were closed down late 75, actually 70, early 76. Okay, so I was there from late 73 to early 76, and then an Italian guy heard me play, and he came there and he offered me a job in Rome, and I went to Rome for 5 years, playing in Rome. So I was never really a disc jockey. I was a disc jockey by default.
Well, this is what I understand. You are building your musical library during these years. You're getting your yayas out at the turntables. You are becoming more, again, technically talented. And then you're headed overseas. Well, we'll take a break, because during our last show, I sort of pushed it, so we're going to take a breather and come back and find out, after meeting all these folks during this seminal moment or phase in your life, where that where that ended up launching you. All right, we'll be back. yourself, though. Oh. Hey, yo, hello again, everyone. This is Eat to the Beat, and I'm Sarah Obritis on Heritage Radio Network. I'm here with Robert Drake, who has been talking about the crescendo of building song lists and personal music libraries and getting out there and playing music for others, being a disc jockey in New York and now over, and then eventually overseas. And really, this is just scratching the surface because, as I mentioned, Robert has these days been working with dozens and dozens, perhaps hundreds and hundreds, who knows, of folks who own bars and restaurants mainly, and they need great song lists, and they also have peculiar or particular funky tastes. And so anyway, they go to a guy like Robert for help. But we will step back for a second and talk about that song that that was being played there.
Mort's Report. Mort Figa. Mort Figa was a well-known jazz disc jockey, one of my favorites, back in the 60s. I used to go to sleep at night with headphones on, just like I am now, because his program would start at about 11 o'clock and would play until 6 in the morning. And I'd have a pencil and a piece of paper on the side of my bed, and 2, 3, 4 in the morning, my eyes would open up and I'd start writing it down. I got my Billie Holiday that way. I got a ton of great, great, great artists that way. This guy was amazing to me.
But how did you actually go out there and capture the music? What was going on those days? You had to buy the record, basically.
Sam Goody's was where I started with the vinyl. I mean, before that, my uncle started me off. When I was 4 years old, he just gave me a ton of classical vinyl. And I also played piano when I was a kid. I started again over the last 10 years. But I've just kind of, different years, I would focus on different types of music. I was a disc jockey for a while in a Brazilian club. I was playing Brazilian music. French club, I was playing French music. Italian when I was in Italy. When I was working in the Caribbean, I used to collect Caribbean music. I know people, have friends in Africa who send me music from Africa. So whatever kinds of music, I have a thirst for all kinds of music. To me, when people ask me a question, well, what's your favorite song? I mean, it depends on what day it is. Mm-hmm. I have favorites, but the favorites are more what your favorites are. You tell me, which is how I look at my clients.
Well, now you're talking about your professional world, but let me just take a sidestep and ask you, because we fancy ourselves as sort of like a do-it-yourself radio program. We did it ourselves by just building this station, and a lot of folks who have shows here or come on the program have built something, you know, on their own. They follow things, they have a passion, they just get it done, basically. So you've kept up with technology, obviously. So tell me, if you can, in, again, a nutshell, the trajectory of fetching that music from the vinyl to these days, you know, buying CDs online or downloading things off the internet. You're obviously constantly looking for the great music you need to find.
I download little or nothing. Everything is from vinyl and CDs. I spend a lot of time, when it's vinyl, I spend a lot of time trying to manually take out pops and clicks and re-EQ and do whatever needs to be done to make the record sound good. And I do the same with CDs, because what happens is I find with a lot of the old vinyl that I had, the CD doesn't sound as good as the vinyl did. And it's not necessarily because of why people think that that there's a difference between the vinyl and CD, meaning that the vinyl does have greater frequencies. It's not necessarily that. It's the way it was remastered. The mastering engineer who did the CDs didn't take into account that it's a different medium. It has to be treated differently. So when they remastered a lot of those vinyl records, they weren't mastered well. And so what I'm doing constantly, daily, is I am remastering using a mastering program. I'm remastering a lot of the CDs, and I'm making my own collection of the stuff that everybody listens to, but recorded the way the vinyl was recorded.
Yeah, I mean, you were just about to tell us about your service to your clients, and that is a service that one would never have imagined that some restaurateur and or a business like a bar or restaurant needs. They need to get better quality music, mm-hmm. and that is one of the many things you offer.
It's a passion. I spend literally every waking hour working on music because I just love it. I mean, if I ever have something, there's ever a minute of time where I don't have anything, I don't watch television, mm-hmm. I'm at my computer, I'm always working on the music.
All right, so well, two things that I want to make sure we get in this program are, one, first off, if, again, we can just touch on it briefly, because we want you back, Robert, to talk about some of the nuts and bolts of how you work with your clients, again, who are persnickety, particular, definitely fashionable rock and rollers, and those guys could be, you know, the chefs, the restaurateurs, maybe, I don't know, I don't know where else where you're throwing your music out there, but how you end up getting them the right music that comes from your own library. And then secondly, I'd like to know what can folks who have their own shop, retail shop, restaurant, what have you, how can they, what are the pieces of advice that, what can they do if they don't have someone like you to hook them up with the sounds and the systems? What can they do that to get it done properly, I guess, and as sort of like a launching pad to that real professional step?
Well, let me first say that I try to work with customers' libraries. They bring me their libraries, and then I will augment it, or I will make suggestions, and I will put things in that they might not have heard, give them ideas, suggestions to how a client or a potential client could either come to me or do something to try and better the music that they have in the restaurant is not use iPods, because they're not professional devices, and simply use something that's that's made particularly for the purpose of playing in restaurants and hotels.
Okay, we're going to take, that's a very important point. I'd like to come back to that. So give us a couple of seconds, guys, and we'll be back here on Eat to the Beat with Robert Drake and me, Sarah Obritis, heritageradionetwork.com. Hello again. Sarah Obritis here on Eat to the Beat, Heritage Radio Network. We're talking with Robert Drake, who builds song lists for great people and has been doing it for years. He's been in the business of sound and music since he was a kid. And we left off on his piece of advice that was, yes, you don't necessarily need me, everyone out there who has bars, restaurants, grocery stores, department stores, whatever. And I wonder why you stick with bars and restaurants, Robert, but we'll get to that, I suppose, soon. If you can't get this professionally done well, playing remastered music through a dynamite sound system, what should you do and what should you not do? And Robert left off by saying, hey, you know, don't try the iPod, don't go that route. You want to just re-explain that point?
Well, let's first go into the fact that I've been in the sound reinforcement business for 30 odd years, and meaning that starting from the Hard Rock Cafe on 57th Street in New York, I put in sound systems for hundreds of restaurants, hotels, museums, all over the city. What I've noticed is that all during this time, I've sat in restaurants, I've watched people, I've watched the staff play with their sound systems and the music, and I've seen the amount of time that they have to spend in order to try and get it right.
I have to interject and tell our audience, hopefully we have a listening audience, that Robert almost did not make it today because of, yes, the torrential rain, which has since stopped, but because one of these restaurants nearby was without sound for quite for the afternoon, and it didn't look good for this evening. So you put your tech dude on. He was on call. Thankfully, he came through. And what did you tell me? Hey, they didn't have me come in from the very beginning or someone like me to do it right. And so now they're facing, and now you're facing lots of these
having to clean up what the mess that they didn't clean up to begin with. I mean, yes, we've got a system working and it's working very well. But every time a busboy cleans up, they always manage to do something to mess up the wires so that something happens. But going back to watching the interaction of staff and the clientele in restaurants, I noticed over the years that some of the biggest problems were table 31, volume's too loud. Table 4, don't you have any music? What is this? And that would go on all night. It would be like a dance. And then the bartender would play his favorite song, or there would be something would happen every 15 or 20 minutes whereby the music had to be messed with.
Well, let me just point out something very interesting. I mean, first off, you're trying to please a diverse community, your group of diners, your guests for the evening, either, however large or small your spot is, they're strangers, and you want to make them all happy, which is in and of itself a very difficult feat. Secondly, you're pointing out that there are architectural challenges to making that work. That plus probably a handful of other major issues. It requires someone to come in and calmly explain the options. Or let's say, you know, hey, you're doing it. It's already faulty.
No, herein is one actually one name that will probably fix all of that. And that is 4 years ago, I became partners with two other guys. One is a technology expert, and the other is a businessman. And we formed a company called Ear Networks, and we have a piece of hardware. And what our hardware does is our hardware has the wish list in it that I created over the last 12 years, meaning the wish list of all of those things that I said happened in restaurants. And 70,000 lines of code was written by my technologist, who made this thing work, and it's been working flawlessly for the last 3 years. And basically, it's populated with a library, and once it's populated with a library, the customer tells us what they want to do, what they want the library to do.
Yeah, but the brilliance is that code, zeros and ones or whatever it is, has got to interact with your subjective tetrar, you know, your head, the knowledge upstairs, mm-hmm. and of course is pulling from your personal, now it's your professional library of 50,000 plus songs, remastered songs, high quality songs. It's an incredible, like.
Well, it's not just me. It's also the fact that all of the music programs and disc jockeys that I've become friendly with over the last 30 years, who are still friends of mine, are now coming into the. Into our umbrella, so they're helping out along with myself to try and work with different clients and find out what their brand is. How do you brand a hotel? How do you brand a restaurant? We want to make the music so that the music is a vision of what you want it to be. So even when you go on vacation, your bartender is not going to change it. No one's going to change it. The music is going to do what it's supposed to do.
Well, basically, that's stored in the server. Each restaurant mm-hmm. has its own protected territorial. It has its box,
right?
And it has its a code for the code. You know, you mm-hmm. know how that. You don't know necessarily what's playing tonight there, but there's a shuffling dance, if you will, that pulls the right music at the right time.
We always know what's playing. For instance, I can go online and look at our web browser, and I could see my restaurant, one of the restaurants I have in Italy, and I can look at it, and I can tell you what song it's playing. And if I need to update that server, I can update it. If I need to change something or delete something, if the client happens to say that we don't like this kind of music, I can just delete it like that, and it's gone.
Well, we do have a couple more minutes, and I'd like to touch on a couple of... I likened you to a sociologist, practically. I mean, you're dealing with so many different personalities. In the front of the house, you're dealing with the chef or owner's personal musical tastes. You're dealing with technological challenges, et cetera, et cetera. And you have to make a lot of people happy. It's a balancing act both with your clients and their guests and what you know is right. And here you are doing the same thing overseas in Rome. So do you have any generalizations or funny anecdotes or something that you've noticed that you've learned are serious differences? You've made mental notes like, hey, this isn't going to work here in Rome, or hey, that could work. I'm going to bring that back to New York, Atlanta, or San Fran, wherever else.
It's interesting because it's hard to really know until you get to work with a client. You know, I would say that working with a client in Rome was a lot easier than working with some of the clients here in New York, because you've got clients with specific, hyper specific tastes, and so you have to work within whatever their tastes are in order to. I'm not looking. I try and have as little ego as possible about this. I'm not looking to try and force them with any type of musical taste. What I want to do is I want to try and draw out what it is that makes them feel good, what works for their restaurant.
Specifically, you ask them to give you something like 20 songs, tracks, musicians, whatever sounds it is that makes them happy. No, really what they like and what they want to have playing, something similar. I guess you're working with a lot of new restaurants. Would you say that they're mainly
new and old?
New and old. Okay, so a lot of folks are just like reestablishing their sound systems.
Sure.
And so, Robert, you take their favorites and you pull from your personal library, and then you develop. You work with your coder who ends up matching that vibe, that beat, the beat per minute. We haven't even talked about the beat per minute. That's sort of a formula,
that's a whole
right?
other discussion. Well, that's something that's very, it's the basis of how a DJ pretty much thinks. You know, in other words, if it's a disc jockey, they will use beat matching in order to make any, either the same kinds of music, whether it be dance music or whether it be different musics. I mean, you could take an African song next to an Italian song, next to a Latin song, next to a dance song, and you can make them all work together as long as you do some kind of beat matching and intensity matching, because what we do is we analyze all of that. Everything is analyzed in our library.
Do you ever analyze the menu? I mean, you're going off of cues from the chef, but do you ever stand back and say, hey, but they're serving something. So, and you kind of visualize how people are eating and what they're eating, and that perhaps it requires a different...
Yeah, but we give them the tools, the very simple tools to work with, so that, for instance, say 30 people walk in the door when they don't expect there to be very many people at all in the restaurant, and they have the ability to just raise the energy of the music at that point in time, or lower the energy of the music. And that's something that's very simple to do.
Well, next time for sure we'll talk about, next time with Robert at least, hopefully he'll be back monthly with a great iPod of music. Ironically, we're playing off an iPod this afternoon.
No, I love the iPod. I use the iPod all the time when I'm listening to the kind of music that I want that I'm considering using for a client. But it's a personal device. It was never made for professional
use. For an 800 square foot venue, exactly.
I have nothing against the iPod. I love the iPod. I have four of them.
So we'll talk about that energy, how to feel it, how to spot it, how to get it, the loudness, the beats, next month. But we will go back to the song we played during our last intermission, because, Robert, you didn't get to... Well, we're about to say goodbye, and thank you very much, Robert, for being with us. But tell us about that track.
That was
another
disc jockey by the name of Del Shields. WBLS, way, way back, was not an R&B station. They were playing mostly jazz, and Del Shields was their main disc jockey, and that was a song written for him, just as the other song, Mort's Report, was written by Red Garland for Mort. Red Garland was one of the piano players in the Miles Davis quintet, Miles Davis septet, I should say. And then Blues for Del was a song written by Kenny Burrell for Del Shields, and Jimmy Smith was the organ player on it.
And these are the origins, or rather, I should say, the makings of Robert Drake, and really a lot of the song lists that we out there may be listening to at restaurants here in New York City, out west, Middle America, and Rome. So thank you, Robert, and let's play that tune. We're going to say goodnight here on Eat to the Beat. It's Monday. Next Monday we'll be here, 7 p.m. back on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. And thank you to our sponsors, Hearst Ranch, who make great grass-fed beef. Good night. Yo siento que tu beso se recrea en mi labio y al amarte toda.